let me start. Okay. Let me start with the, thank you, Kelly, for reminding me. Richard, I noticed that on your implementers call, you have it prominently on the top, host should start recording. Anyway, so antitrust policy prevents us from colluding, talking about price fixing, doing anything that is anti-competitive. But anti-competitive is, meanings of anti-competitive have started to evolve. Anyway, that's that. Now, we had a bunch of edits on the Hyperledger paper. We'll talk about that in a minute. Before that, edits, or rather comments, because I had locked down the paper for editing because of controversy of people showing up and deleting stuff. So I did not want to, compromise the integrity of the already created paper. You know, of course, everything is up for debate and we can make changes as we need. I think we have to release something by the end of the year, and I feel the pressure to do that because we have been keeping this paper in this suspended state for quite a long time. And I believe that we need closure on at least creating something. And I see that Drummond is here too, so that's great. So first step, we'll go through introductions. Everybody knows everybody else, but still there are people who do not know what people's intentions are, and not only forget the intentions, what people's backgrounds are, and why they are in this meeting. So let's start with you, Drummond, since
I can only stay for the first half of the meeting, as usual.
Yes.
Sure, yeah. Drummond Reed, at Evernim, I'm Chief Trust Officer, and at the Sovereign Foundation, I'm one of the trustees, and I chair the Governance Framework Working Group, which is, I've got a couple announcements here of things that are coming. That's part of what I wanted to, because I've been, this is the 2 days I'll have to travel tomorrow are the ninth straight week of travel, this is the first week with less than four business days, so it's just been crazy. That's why I haven't made any meetings recently. Anyway, I do a lot of evangelizing of SSI and of Hyperledger, Indy, Ursa, and Aries, and so that's why I'm here.
Kelly?
Sorry, I always mute when I'm taking all of the minutes. Kelly Cooper, working on the identity group for quite a while and working on the white paper with Vipin et al.
Marvin. If you want to talk, do you have to get off mute, Marvin? Otherwise, you can stay on mute, or I can unmute you if you want. I'll unmute you and wait. Oh, okay. You're in a noisy. I tried to unmute you, but you seem to stay muted. I don't know why. Richard.
Yeah, I'm Richard Esplin, a product guy at Evernim. And I am responsible for most of our contributions to upstream projects like Hyperledger. And it's a lot of fun to see the conversations that happen in this community and be part of bringing it into actual code people can deploy.
Okay, so I am Vipin Bharathan. I've been a host of this meeting for a while. I have worked as a developer for many years, more than 30. I worked in banking. I worked in media. I worked in embedded systems. I worked in a lot of different fields. But it's the last 5 years that I've been involved in blockchain that seemed very exciting to me. And for various reasons, I was aware of the parlous state of the software industry for quite a while. And that we are not taking responsibility for some of the products that we have unleashed on the world. And I think this is becoming more and more apparent. And I think the only way we can make things better is to work on the 98% of the systems that are not privacy preserving and hope to reverse them to some extent. At the same time, we also remain hopeful about concepts like SSI, which we hope will take over the world one day. But in the meantime, I'm also alive to the possibility that we can't make drastic changes in the next few years, and hence we need to be working on the systems that are already leaking tons of information. And how do we do that? How do we persuade people? There seem to be a break in the dam of those enormous corporations having all our data. Anyway, enough grandstanding. So I would ask Drummond to talk a little, because I wasn't expecting him to show up. I would like to ask Drummond to talk a little bit about the proselytizing that he's been doing in the various fora. And I would want to also formally invite him to present on all the sovereign stuff that he has been working on recently, and all the new and exciting developments in all these different places where he has been traveling to.
All the different places. So, happy to share updates from a couple different perspectives, sovereign, and but also, you know, sort of Hyperledger things that are going on related to identity from both. So I'll start on the sovereign side. Relative to topics this group has been discussing, we are hopefully within each week. I say, well, within a week of being done, but I'm quite determined that between now and U.S. Thanksgiving, I'm going to extend that. The next Sovereign Foundation board meeting is December 4th. It's a Wednesday. No later than that, we will submitting the what I call the data protection revisions to the sovereign governance framework. We finished the second generation in March, but we tackled everything except GDPR compliance. We now call it DPR compliance because Sovereign is a global network, and a number of our stewards and call it customers, folks that want to use the network, pointed out, well, GDPR is one set of privacy regulations. They sort of tend to suck all the oxygen out of the room for the rest. But some of the potential customers of Sovereign are in fact governments, specifically the earliest production usage of the Sovereign Ledger is from agencies of the Canadian, excuse me, provinces of the Canadian government, starting with BC and Ontario. So as we put these revised documents, which include a transaction author agreement and what we call the transaction endorser agreement, transaction author is anyone who wants to write to the Sovereign network, which currently is limited to organizations due to the GDPR concerns. But they, the BC government in particular said, these agreements aren't really written for a government to execute as a customer of the network, as a user of the network. And so we have been going through and working through that with BC Gov. I have another call here coming up this morning to hopefully close on how we address that issue. But the larger point is how does self-sovereign identity, which is ultimately backed by, you know, blockchains, immutable ledgers, square with, you know, GDPR, the rights of data subjects under GDPR for many different rights, but most notably the right of erasure. And even though in systems like Sovereign, there is very little on the ledger, it has been, you know, widely acknowledged that under GDPR, even a DID for an individual, if it identifies an individual, even if it's pseudonymous and the corresponding public key that would be in that DID document is pseudonymous, that's personal data. So it's subject to the GDPR. So it was an 8-month effort of the Sovereign Governance Framework Working Group, the Perkins Coie, the law firm for the Sovereign Foundation. A number of stewards were involved, led by IBM. To work through how do you, square that circle. And so anyway, there are 8 documents involved, 3 new
and
ones.
And how do you square that circle? I mean, in one word, in one sentence?
In one sentence, with a contract. The transaction author agreement is a contract between the transaction author and the Sovereign Foundation as a legal representative of the stewards as a whole. And it's very we're working on when we put that out, there'll be a web page that we publish that has a whole explanation. There is a diagram I can share with you if you want to see it. I have enough time to show it, and it I think it would fascinate. Let me just
sure.
It's actually not very very complex to explain. I just got to grab it here, where it is right. There it is. You pull it up and then I'll share it. Okay, make it a little bit bigger here and hit the share button. Okay. Right here. Okay. You seeing that?
Yep.
Good. So in GDPR, there are 3 roles: data subject, subject of the personal data. There's data controllers, meaning an entity that's always considered an organization of some kind, a legal entity that it's shared with, that controls its purpose and means of processing. And then the data controller can use a data processor basically as a subcontractor to do some processing on that data under the control of the data controller. So those are the 3 roles that GDPR sets out. And because GDPR did not anticipate the whole advent of self-sovereign identity, where the ultimate data controller is the individual. And now in this diagram, transaction authors can be individuals, organizations, or even things. A thing will eventually be able to write directly to the sovereign ledger under public right access, which is on the right side. So what you see here in this diagram is 2 paths to write, what we call them policy paths, to write to the sovereign ledger. The current path, the only path today, is permission right access. But what we're driving towards is the path of public right access. And the difference between the two is very simple. Permission right access, a transaction author has to go through transaction endorser. This is an organization that has its own contract with Sovereign Foundation that gives it permission to write to the network via a steward. Transaction endorsers submit transactions to a steward, any steward on the network. It doesn't matter. They're running a steward node. You submit a proper transaction. It's validated. It's consensus protocol replicated across all the other stewards, and it goes on the ledger. The difference with public right access is remove the transaction endorser. Transaction authors write directly to the ledger via steward, and they do it by including a fee in sovereign tokens. And I always have to provide the rejoinder, that's an if. There is no guarantee there will be a sovereign token, and no you know, no commitment to any date or any, you know, it is only a future possibility. But we've been designing towards enabling public right access from the very outset, the beginning of Sovereign 3.5 years ago, 2019. Yeah, I guess, well, just over 3 years ago. So, and we've...
Time flies.
Time flies, exactly. So the, we have prepared these documents, these revisions to the governance room to cover all of this, both situations, and that's why the same agreement. So the legal analysis, Vipin, that we arrived at that basically squared the circle is to say, the role of the Sovereign Foundation is not as a data controller. It's not. The point is, the transaction authors in a self-sovereign identity system, that's the whole point. They're the data controllers, right? So the role of Sovereign Foundation, there's something called joint controller. It is not a joint controller. It doesn't actually have any control. That's the transaction authors that have that control. But for legal purposes, the lawyer said, we're going to call it a designated data controller, because what happens in this contract here, the one, these CI stands for contractual instrument. This was prepared by Dan Gisolfi at IBM, this diagram. Contractual instrument number two is called the transaction author agreement. Number three is the transaction endorser agreement. Number one is called the steward agreement. And that's always been in the sovereign governance framework, because all the stewards have a contract with Sovereign Foundation. That's why it's a public permission network. So we've added these two contracts with the transaction endorser, transaction author, and they both designate the Sovereign Foundation as the data controller for purposes of dealing with the whole network, so that legally you can make this work. And so the key revisions, to answer your question, Vipin, and the thing that allows us to address the challenges of writing personal data to a public ledger, immutable ledger, is this contract right here, the transaction author agreement, which says, hey, you're going to be writing to a immutable public ledger. There's no guarantee that if you ever want to exercise your right of erasure, that can be done. There are processes we're looking at called tombstones that help basically mark data as not to be returned by the stewards. That hasn't been implemented yet. There's no guarantee it will be. There's no guarantee it'll work.
Have you thought of another possibility? The initial paper by Satoshi, right?
Yeah.
Did talk about erasure, if you remember it, that it was the unspent transaction of, the spent transaction outputs that would be removed. Okay. He had proposed a scheme for that. And there's a reason for that scheme to be valid.
Okay.
Sort of, right?
Yeah.
So in that sense, the ledger then becomes mutable. I believe that some of these difficulties can be resolved by doing just that, especially if the ledger is to stand forever, because, you know, any human construct that is designed to stand forever never does. I'm talking
right,
not 10 years, but 10,000 years, let's say.
Right.
So, you know, there are possibilities there. I don't know whether you guys have. So that's one. The
yes.
Second one is, you guys write all these rules, you know, and expect people to implement a real system. GDPR people, or not only GDPR, but any DPR guys, have to revisit some of these some of these regulations, because otherwise no real system will ever be built that conforms with the specifications. So those are the two. One, move the goalposts. The other, you know, the erasure happens, but under very controlled circumstances. Anyway,
yeah,
actually, I know that it's anathema to people when you talk about these things, but, you know.
The second one you just mentioned, I think it was the first one you brought up, of actually pruning. Is the term that the Technical Governance Board of the Sovereign Foundation has used, is a possibility. However, given the pseudonymous nature of the personal data that would be on the ledger, now that's what, you know, unless there's an attack. I mean, the thing is, it could, any ledger could, you could try and write illegal data to it as a form of attack and sort of poison the ledger. And those are the kinds of things where it really would be good to be able to prune it off. The pseudonymous DIDs and public keys, there's less concern because there's also a pending question of, if you destroy the private key, have you effectively deleted the data? There's no longer an association with the individual.
But that proof is tremendously difficult, because you can always have a cold storage wallet, like something written
down
on a piece of paper somewhere.
I mean,
nobody can prove that you don't have it.
Right. But the counter argument is, it's the individual's right to erasure. So you're basically saying, just like you are the data controller, you are also the one that controls the right of erasure. So you don't have to prove it to anyone. You see what I mean? So the net of it is we've designed this and we've built this contract so that we can put it out there. The contract, the transaction author agreement.
Will they buy it, GDPR guys?
That's what we're going to find out.
Okay.
We're going to be very loud and proud of, here it is. We've done it, and it's real. And now, and we have a set of stewards that we've been discussing it with. Some of whom are nervous. A small set are still nervous, but we think that it's a tractable problem. So, anyway, that was the. Sort of announcement number one is that's almost done. The docs you can all see in the governance framework working group, the governance, sovereign governance framework. If you Google that page, you can see all the docs. And then the other one is that there is a task force of sovereign governance framework called the Guardianship Task Force, and Kelly is a member of that. So I want to highlight, she's been helping with wonderful editing of, in addition to the identity paper here, the guardianship white paper, which that task force has been working on since it formed in January. And it's going to be launched at an event in Toronto on digital identity and dementia, really SSI and dementia, put together by a company called Secours. Based in Canada and working on SSI solutions for dementia patients and their caregivers, and with some Canadian government funding. It's a big deal in Canada. So that's going to be on the 21st, hosted by Ryerson University in Toronto, and I'm going to speak, and we're going to launch that paper there. And I highly recommend this paper. It's 32 packed pages. Deep discussion and exploration of the whole concept of guardianship and self-sovereign identity. Guardianship being the, you know, maintaining a digital wallet and the credentials that are needed for someone who's not able to do that themselves, be it, you know, a newborn child and a parent or a guardian, a dementia patient, a refugee, anyone. The numbers vary from, you know, a seventh to a third of the world is in that situation. They don't have.
If you don't know how to read and write, for example.
Exactly. You don't have network devices. You don't have connectivity, all those things. We can't do the Sovereign Foundation.
It's the 21st of November?
Yeah.
Okay.
In Toronto.
Well, maybe that should show up. I don't know.
I'm happy to that I can forward you an invitation, Vipin, because do I have your current email? I think I do. Yeah.
Yes.
Good. All right.
Anyway, so your time is coming to an end, I think. Here.
I do, but I have one more thing.
Go ahead.
I'm going to share this one quickly, and here is, I'll put the link in the chat. The third thing is a Hyperledger Aries announcement. And you may have seen this. I just wanted to bring it up with the group and get it in the minutes. We published an RFC on the Trusted Over IP stack. And you've heard me, you know, talk about this before, and you know, I put out webinars and stuff, but this is the classic diagram you'll see. But this is now Hyperledger Aries RFC. And I will grab this and stick it in the chat so that we get that recorded here.
0289, right?
Yes, 0289. That's the number. You can also just flat out Google it now because it's been out there for about a week. So I just wanted to point out I think you're gonna see a lot more discussion about this because it is, you know, a complete stack. We call it the network of networks approach, where any number of networks that want to support DIDCOM layer 2, it is not sovereign specific anymore, or even Indy specific. Indy is just one of the DID methods, DID registry technology.
Well, you know, if you remember, we spoke about it when we met for consensus back in May. Anyway, Matthew Davey also alerted me to to this. I'm in touch with him, so I see that he's one of the authors.
He is, yes. There are and is Daryl joined us?
Daryl is also on the thing, and he's going to be presenting on digital wallet. At least he offered to present on digital wallets in the identity working group.
Yeah, good. The reason I said that, I thought Daryl may have joined the call because I just got a text from him. And I thought he was just texting me to mention something about this, but no, I don't see him on the call. All good. Yeah, there are six authors. Myself, Daniel Hartman, chief architect at Evernym, but then Daryl, Dan Gisolfi at IBM, John Jordan from BC Gov, and Matthew Davey. We've been working on this, you know, sort of the complete ledger independent view of the stack, pretty much since January. So it's great to finally get it out. This is based now at Hyperledger. There's discussion with the Decentralized Identity Foundation about whether it will be homed, the set of RFCs around this will be homed there, because just to have a stronger bridge with the Decentralized Identity Foundation community. Lots going on around that, but I think I've run out of time. So those are my three updates I wanted to share.
Beautiful.
All right, super. Well, thanks. Once again, I have to love you and leave you to give this other call, but I'm glad to touch in and that you're carrying this this group forward, Vipin.
But you know, we don't have participation that we should have. It's very difficult to get people interested. But next week we're going to have. Next time we're going to have. Stefan Mui from Europe are present on FATF regulations for digital identity. And I'm going to speak about FATF regulations for beneficial ownership in a minute when you leave. But there, you know, we are just speaking among friends at this point. Like, there are only three people once you leave.
Yeah. And next week, I know I'm going to have a conflict. I'm going to be in a two-day workshop back east, so I won't be able to get it. But the following week, well, actually, so is it weekly now, or is it still every other week?
No, every other week. So it's going to be on the 27th.
Good. Okay. I should be able to make it that day. That's the day before U.S. Thanksgiving. So yeah.
Yes.
I'll plan
we'll,
on that.
We'll be just buying our turkeys.
There you go. All right. Bye all. Thanks, Vipin. Appreciate it.
All right. So back to the group. Now, Richard and Kelly, do you feel like we should continue with this call and conversation, or what are your thoughts?
I think that we need to discuss next steps on the paper, because yeah. I think that the way that it is right now, it's just kind of open and there. And I think that we can develop some action items that might target specific people or specific sections of the paper, so that otherwise it's going to be the 1st of December.
Yes. And
it's going to sit there.
I know. The problem is this. Kalia has introduced a whole, I believe, a controversial thing about decentralized identity. I mean, implementations. So I had called it implementation. She wants to call it decentralized implementation. But unfortunately, the point is that most of these implementations are, you know, quote unquote centralized. So I don't want to get into the whole decentralized, centralized thing inside the paper, because wherever I've seen that that debate, it has gone down a path of. So I want to ask you, both you and Richard, about your reaction to this. You know.
Well, I think that. What's in jeopardy is that identity is moving so quickly that the value of the paper is diminishing. Part of my thought is, does it remain a white paper, or does it become its own kind of resource for defining terms? I'm not really sure, but it seems to be that the pace of the paper is not up to speed with the pace of the changes in it. And so I don't know if we should kind of simplify it down to a snapshot paper that says, this is the end of 2019. At the end of 2019, this is a current state. And then just finish it at that and not be thinking in the future. And then there could be a 2020 paper as well. I'm not sure, but I do think that a snapshot approach will help to minimize some of the things that will be versus some of the things that are. Richard, what do you think?
I'm not very well informed. The work that's happening with the paper, my very superficial assessment is it's very similar to some of the thought leadership that's done in rebooting Web of Trust. And one of the things I like about the rebooting Web of Trust is that it's snapshot to a point in time. And my main feedback on the paper is that it'll be a lot easier for me and the teams I work with to engage once it's in GitHub. And having a point in time saying this is version 2019, now let's start working on 2020, would make it much easier, I think, to keep up to date and relevant.
Agreed. Agree about that aspect anyway, because the paper, you know, when you use the word paper, it often does not capture that changing sense. So it is going to be in GitHub by the end of this week, I promise. You know, and I'm going to have to invite multiple people to be maintainers. Kelly is already going to be one of the maintainers, and you know, whoever else wants to be a responsible citizen, you know, because earlier I had locked it down only because it was completely open. Anybody could edit it. Anybody could do whatever they wanted with it. People started removing huge sections of it. I don't know why, you know. You never know the intentions. And it has been, like Kelly says, in limbo, basically. But I don't agree with this
this assessment that things are moving so fast, because I feel like, okay, there is great excitement on the SSI front of the identity solutions for billions of people. I don't know how many millions or even what percentage is now using SSI. And I was about to ask someone, what are the production systems that use SSI right now? You know, because I keep asking that question. You know, I know that is a wave of the future, but it's still uncertain as to whether it will pass muster, especially in governments, governmental circles. And believe me, you need that, because even Bitcoin, which was supposed to be decentralized, ultimately collapsed into this morass because the exchanges had to do KYC in order to do business in significant locations. You know, I mean, so
what is the purpose of the paper? Because I don't think that we're positing a definitive system. I thought that we were just kind of doing a survey of, this is kind of the positives and negatives, or this is the current state of affairs of NR. This is the current, where we are currently here. This is where we're currently there. So if we're trying to decide, are we truly decentralized, and does this technology have merit to stand a test of time? I don't think that paper is possible to write at this moment.
No. We are just describing implementations. Let's say what I'm saying is, if I'm saying implementations, I don't need to qualify it by saying centralized implementations, do I? I can describe in the implementation, this is the state of the art today. What's that?
I was just, you asked who's using it in production today. I can, if you're interested, I can review a few of the production use cases that Evernym and the Sovereign Network is seeing today.
Okay, let's put that in also. At least, you know, send me the thing and I'll do some research and I'll add them to the, and I will put, you know, look, I want to be completely honest and open about this, instead of being like using these terms, decentralized, for example, you know, which implies a certain, I mean, in the end, you know, you have the Sovereign Foundation, you have the Libra Foundation, you have the, you know, whatever it is, there has to be some governance model that centralizes certain parts of it and decentralizes other parts. So to call something centralized or decentralized as a whole you know, we are moving towards decentralization. Let's put it that way, right? And how do we do that? We can say all that stuff in the paper. You know, I mean, controversy is part of this, but, you know, I don't think that we should, like, characterize one as centralized and another as decentralized. In fact, people would say that Bitcoin is not decentralized, even though they all keep insisting it is, because 80% of Bitcoin is owned by, you know, 90% of Bitcoin is owned by, like, 100 guys. You know, there are less than 100 developers doing work in Bitcoin. There, you know, every, you know, the mining pools are concentrated in one country. I mean, you know, all of this stuff, I mean, people start yelling and screaming about it, this, by saying that everything else is, you know, anathema and this is the real truth. But fact remains that we have these systems, we have these identity systems. Hyperledger Fabric uses LDAP. It uses things that are, you know, possibly in the last century, but they are using it today. We can say, you know, this is what's being used, and this could be a way that people have proposed to move into the next stage. Fine. As long as we are enthralled to the global financial system, to FATF, to GDPR, to all of these different things, they are all pronouncements by centralized authorities, and we are under their control to some extent. So, for example, let's take the FATF stuff that we are talking about here, right? Which is something to make the beneficial ownership situation clear. Because why are people so interested in beneficial ownership? Beneficial ownership is if you have a corporation, and if you have another corporation owning this corporation, or if you have shareholders, ultimate controllers of this corporation under multiple layers turn out to be people who are not people who you should be doing business with, either because they are politically exposed persons, they have known to have terrorist links, whatever, you know. I mean, I'm not saying that these are, any kind of political pronouncement on this, but these are the rules under which the financial system, for example, operates. And they're saying that the FATF is saying that we have to use multiple ways in order to deal with the beneficial ownership conundrum. That means there is a registry. Company registries are, you know, should contain accurate information about the owners. We have to remove bearer shares, you know, basically any shares or nomination, you know, nominees, that is somebody who's delegated to act on the benefit of somebody else. And only you don't see the real owner. So, you know, all of these are real problems, and how do we solve them through the constructs that we have today? And how do we advance the cause of decentralization or the cause of moving stuff into the edge devices in a good way? So the FATF stuff is important because they provide guidance, but at the same time, if you don't follow their guidance, they will put you on the proscribed list, or the jurisdiction will be deemed not, high risk jurisdiction. So people may not be wanting to transact with that jurisdiction. I mean, they have a list of countries which you're not supposed to, but you're supposed to be extra careful about. So these things, these guidances or recommendations become important in real financial systems or real interchanges. So I don't know, you know.
Well, I think what you're talking about is really what needs to be in the paper.
Yeah.
Right? And so yes. It could be that we can even take this recording and what it is that you're talking about, because in any paper there, in any typical paper, there is a recommendation system. And these concerns that need to be looked at are a valid part of the paper.
Okay, yeah, so to that effect, there is a SSI implementation. Okay, so now moving on to the next thing, we so the links are there the meeting minutes, right?
Yes.
So if you go to the beneficial ownership paper, it talks about how the beneficial ownership should be checked for companies. And for companies, it is a legal, what they call legal persons. Legal entity identifier is the way to identify entities. One of the ways, right? So GLEIF, which is the Global Legal Entity Identifier Foundation, houses the legal entity identifiers. And the GLEIF has worked with UPort to use credentials to support the issue, to support who can control the LEI, because LEI is a corporation, and in the end, it is the employees of the corporation, the roles that are employed by the corporation who have rights to control that, facts about that corporation, including filing regulatory filings to regulators. In the end, it comes from real people. The corporation exists as a legal entity, but so there is a whole chain of credentialing that follows the GLEIF situation. In the end, at the end of the chain are the actual individuals who can act on behalf of the company. The first one in there, which is about, I just found this, and this is about the Euro filing. So I'm gonna just share that little bit here, so that we know what we're talking about. See this?
Yeah.
So it's just two of us left, I think, Kelly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So here it's interesting, right? Because this is by the head of standards of GLEIF. And it's talking about a project with Indy. POC, I didn't even know that. It doesn't talk about that, but it talks about the way that GLEIF could work with verifiable credentials. And I think they've come up with a POC with UPort. So this is a positive step, right? Because a big organization, centralized, is now trying to do this decentralized SSI or credentialing-based approach to augment their, the surety of their legal entity identifiers. Anyway, I don't want to keep talking about this, but because
it's good. It's also good to get into the moment beyond hype where critique comes in.
Yes.
In any technology, right? So these are important conversations.
Okay. So even if it's just the two of us, I guess we are talking about these things. And next week, the FATF digital identity paper is going to be talked about by Stefan, who's actually an expert in this.
Yes.
So we have to So Stefan is also a skeptic, right? Because he's a lawyer who deals with stuff on a daily basis regarding identity with banks and European clients.
Yes.
And I heard the same thing yesterday in the Indie Semantics working group, where people were talking about selective disclosure and all kinds of other stuff. But there was a guy I think it was from Novartis or one of the big drug companies. And he was saying, what are you guys talking about? These days, we take the whole thing, like, you know, we take a driver's license. We don't have, we don't look at only parts of it, or we take a passport. There is no structure today to support selective disclosure as part of the verification process or proofing process in identity. Unless there is such a thing, having a selective disclosure pathway in a SSI is all well and good. It's a good thing to build, but will anybody even use it? You know, these are real issues.
Yes.
Anyway, so I guess what I have to do now is to work on creating this GitHub repository and getting the paper, wrangling the paper into a shape that can be at least considered for publishing by the end of this year.
And I think too that if you're looking at the paper and you say it is not going to be published by the end of this year and you're not satisfied with it, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think that we just keep going on the group and maybe say, we're going to take a section of this and write a current snapshot on EDR or a current, you know, this or that. So there's no one that is saying that it has to be any particular paper, right? And so what you think is meaningful and what you think is going to build understanding is what's important. It doesn't have to be a comprehensive typical white paper.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, I think in the beginning we have to come up with that caveat that this is a state of the art as we see at this point mm-hmm. in time, and maybe we will publish further revisions to this later mm-hmm. on.
Okay.
So that's. That's what I think we have to do in order for it.
We know that moving forward with new technology is a rocky road. So it's about embracing that. And even if there's one piece of the paper that we dig deep on, even if we decide, hey, this is just going to be a paper on use case for selective disclosure. I mean, even one thing like that can still bring about learning more than a primer.
Okay. Sorry, I haven't been as responsive to, with respect to the GitHub thing, but I think...
No, it's fine. It's fine. I have a day job. I'm buried, so it's... I understand.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Vipin.
All right, Ben.
Okay, onward. There we
onward.
Go. Onward. Thanks, Vipin. Have a good, I guess it's Tuesday. Good week. Okay.
All right.
I'll talk to you tomorrow anyway, tomorrow morning in capital markets. Is that tomorrow?
No.